Thank you for joining us on Warrior Women Speak. I'm Judge Rosemarie Aquilina, author of Just Watch Me, and I'm joined with my co-host, Sherry Botwin, LCSW, social worker and trauma specialist, and author of Thriving After Trauma, Stories of Living and Healing. We have created this podcast for your enjoyment and so that we all can talk about our issues and learn together about how to deal with trauma and those things that spring up in our everyday life. Please join us for every episode and let us know what you want to talk about. Now for the show. Trauma-informed care. We've had other episodes about trauma, but it's so important. We're going to talk again about the body holding trauma. By age 16, approximately 25% of children and adolescents in the United States experience at least one potentially traumatic event, including life-threatening accidents, disasters, maltreatment, assault, and family and community violence. And what this leads to, ultimately, to put it succinctly, and that's where Sherry, our expert here, comes in, is the three E's of trauma. And I don't mean E's, E-A-S-E. I'm talking about the letter E, and what it stands for is events, experiences, and effects. And when you look at the breakdown like that, you really have a good understanding of what happens in the body, the mind, physically, emotionally, and it really encompasses trauma. Sherry, what can you tell us about events, experiences, and effects, the relationship? Because it seems to me that trauma that is not handled properly or not handled at all surfaces in so many ways. So we first need to understand what events, what experiences, and the effects, and so that we can get it handled.
Okay. So, and I think this is such a great topic to talk about because a lot of people are trying to figure out more about how trauma lands and sits in our bodies. When we talk about the three E's, the actual event is the least of the issue. While it's horrible and it's devastating, the actual whatever happened, whether somebody's assaulted, somebody witnesses a sudden loss, somebody survives a tornado, a hurricane, usually the actual event of trauma lasts seconds, minutes. But when you talk about the experience and the effects, this is where people really suffer. What happens is that oftentimes something awful will happen, but then people are stuck in a state of flight or fight. They're stuck in a sort of like a body that isn't in the moment. People's defense mechanisms kick in immediately when we sense that there's any type of danger, or when we're in a situation where we feel like we are caught off guard, our safety is compromised. Most of us will leave our bodies. So what happens is we disconnect. A lot of times people will talk about when this happened or when that happened, I felt like I was watching myself X, Y, and Z. So I think it's important today that we focus on the experience and the effect, not because the trauma itself isn't important, but it's the impact of the trauma and what it leaves us feeling. That's what needs the most attention.
So those events or series of events, circumstances that people experience, it can be physically or emotionally harmful. It can even be life-threatening. And the effects are long-lasting, and they're usually adverse effects on the individual's functioning and mental, physical, social, emotional, or spiritual well-being. So even though people say, and I'm one of those, oh, I can get over it, I can handle it, it has a tendency to surface. And we need to have this trauma-informed approach to deal with safety, trustworthiness, transparency, peer support or other kinds of support, whether it be your wife, husband, child, therapist for sure, collaboration and empowerment, giving people back their voice and choice, because they really lose that when some trauma happens, even though they may not realize it. And they also, we also, I should say, need to be aware of cultural, historical, and gender issues that are going on, because those can dramatically affect and heighten, I think, the trauma that people experience.
You have definitely done your homework, by the way. You just covered the gamut when you talk about the different factors that we need to consider, the different effects, and how people respond to these types of situations differently based on culture, gender, family, support system. So right before we got on today, you and I were talking about how my little guy just had this oral surgery yesterday. And I wasn't even thinking about this till you just started talking, but we were saying yesterday how when you get a surgery, you are put under medication, you're numb, you don't feel anything. And often what happens for people when they have a surgery is as the medication wears off, then your body starts to feel whatever trauma, even though, again, it was not trauma in a bad way. But when you're getting surgery, it can be traumatic, obviously, on the part of your body where the surgery is taking place. So you and I were talking today about how I was thinking yesterday, wow, he didn't seem like he was feeling bad. He was happy. He was hanging out with his friends. And then when he first got up today, he was saying how he's in a lot of pain. And it took me a minute to figure out, oh, wait a minute. Like it's not like you just get over it. It's usually day two and three after a surgery that you start to really feel things. That's trauma. What happens is we can't process things as they happen. We need to get through it. Now, again, when somebody's having a surgery, that's why they go under anesthesia. That's why they use laughing gas or whatever they're using, Twilight, because we can't be awake for that. We could never get through a surgery and feel what is happening in our bodies. So these forms of care are very helpful when there's a medical issue, but when it's something that happens to us, if somebody is assaulting us or our physical life or even our mental well-being is in danger, in the moment, we think we'll get through this, we'll be fine. Just like you said a couple minutes ago, that sometimes you'll say that. This is where we really have to talk more about the idea that our brains aren't equipped to move as quickly as our bodies are. We move through the event, right? The car accident happens, the surgery happens, we go to the funeral and we think, oh, I mean, it wasn't that bad. Like, I think I can do this. Once we have a chance to sit and be with the thoughts and the feelings and we comprehend what just happened, that's when the experience and the effects take a toll. That's when you start to feel things physically, mentally, in all different ways.
So I am not book trained in any therapy, and our listeners should know I'm not an expert, but I do see so much on the bench. And recently, when you're talking about your son, I just want to share this story that happened in front of me. I had a gentleman who was drug addicted and he'd been cleaned up now in jail and he committed some crimes to support his habit. Well, unfortunately, and as I was, you know, everybody knows I talk to everybody. I want to know the backstory. I'm trying to figure out where do we put him and what happens. I discovered that he had three children. And then I started to ask him questions. And he said, well, because I asked where they were living, he said, well, they're not living with us anymore. My rights have been terminated and the rights of the mother have been terminated. And he has three children. Now, I can pinpoint his relapse, his most recent relapse, to the parental termination, which maybe he wasn't the best parent. I don't know about that underlying case, so I really can't comment on it. But regardless of whether he was the best parent or the worst parent, he loved his kids and he had this addiction. And I suspect that those behaviors led him to neglect his children and the mom too, who was addicted. and he knows what town the kids are in. A family member was not able to adopt them. So he is forever going to be missing his children. And of course, there's ways when they're adults to hopefully get in contact and hopefully he'll heal. But my job in that moment then is not just to treat his addiction, but also that emotional trauma, which is now adding to the addiction and the driving force within him to drown himself out of reality.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you just started talking about his addiction and losing his parental rights, he's relapsing. I think this is what you're saying. He's relapsing because he can't tolerate the pain around the emotional pains. But what's happening is he's feeling something. He's feeling all kinds of stuff. So every time somebody goes to grab a narcotic or an alcoholic beverage in those situations, they're trying to, and I don't know what he's doing, but it's a way to take the feelings in our body and not feel it. So it's ironic too, because if you think about it, it's the addiction that could have caused him to lose his parental rights, but it's his addiction that also helps him manage his feelings about losing his parental rights.
Right.
We have to figure out with people like him, how do we help him replace what he's doing with the addiction with something that would be considered healthier, something that would allow him to actually deal with his feelings and not continue to hold all that in his body. The thing about trauma that drives me nuts, and I know people can relate to this, is once something happens to us and we figure out how to not feel our feelings, people do this for years. Like when you were saying about the three E's, the effects, I know people who for decades will use drugs or have an eating disorder or drink because they can't tolerate the emotions behind something that might have happened 10, 20, 50 years ago. So the challenge is, how do you get somebody to identify what feelings they're actually even having, how it's in their bodies, how it's manifesting in their bodies, and then how to begin to heal from that?
Right. They really need a trauma-informed care approach. For this man, I got him cognitive therapy, so he learns to retrain his thinking, but also grief counseling, because that is an emotional nightmare. I can't imagine it. You know, his children didn't go to God. They went to a stranger. They're still on this planet. He has no idea. And of course, he blames himself for losing those kids. And I'm sure the kids miss him. You know, they were, I think, under 9 years old, but they bonded regardless. And children of abused homes, and again, that's additional trauma we need to recognize. They don't know any other lifestyle. So we need to also retrain the thinking. When you're talking about effect, we need to retrain the brain to find safety, to understand what happened to them. Feeling safe is the only way you can heal regardless of what's happened to you, right?
Right. And how do you feel safe when you've been ripped away from your parent, even if your parent was awful? And how is the parent who just lost his child or children, how is he supposed to regain a sense of safety and connection when the most important things to him are no longer in his vicinity? The thought of that, even it breaks my heart. I'm just curious, now that you're talking about this case, how long, when you say he lost his parental rights, forever?
Like forever. Parental termination. Parental termination is very real. So I think, again, one of the importance, it's the importance of understanding trauma, of our show, of what you do every single day, because trauma has all sorts of effects and the cause and effect are very real. And when you cannot be a functioning parent, hopefully somebody can take over for you. But when they can't, the state can intercede in the best interests of the child, because the child has a right to be cared for properly. And the state, and this is in all of the United States, can come in and offer you services if you don't do well. then they can terminate your rights. And we should probably do a whole other show on that and dealing with some other family issues, but it's very real and people need to get help before there are these outcomes where you do a drunk driving and you kill someone, where you lose your children, where you are cutting and now you get an infection, or you're bulimic, whether you overeat or undereat. I mean, we've had shows on these things, but it's really important to remind people that they can heal. They can change their way of thinking. They just really have to be open to it, but you need a safe place and someone who is trauma informed. There are a lot of therapists out there. They're not all created equal. If you have trauma, you need a trauma informed therapist. And you go to special training for that, right?
I mean, again, part of the training for us is our experience. Unfortunately, even though trauma is something that's much more dealt with, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, there's not a specific criteria that somebody has to meet to call themselves a trauma therapist. So anybody could say, I'm a trauma therapist. One of the things I was doing before we got on air today was I was looking at what does trauma-informed mean? And how do you find somebody that is trauma trained? How do you find a therapist? And again, there's different modalities that therapists can use. There's different trainings. We can go to train in DBT. We can be trained to do EMDR. These are different modalities. There's somatic processing, which is pretty relevant to the discussion we're having now. And I think too, really what's important to understand, just as people, therapists or not, it's important to understand that when you go through something that is traumatic, and again, we use that word all the time, when you go through something that you feel like your physical or emotional safety has been compromised, or when you experience an event that you had no warning for, or when you suddenly become ill, or somebody else suddenly passes away, these are things that we don't prepare for. We don't go to school and learn about what to do if we lose a family member suddenly. These are things that happen. We were talking about this today too, before we came on air. There's been an awful lot of people in the news. We're hearing about different celebrities that are either dying by suicide or having cardiac arrest. We were talking, I don't remember if we talked about this on the show, but the Buffalo Bills player who suddenly fell to the ground and had cardiac arrest. And again, one of the things that we have to think about is when we witness this kind of stuff, or this is something that happens to people around us, if somebody is having something happen in their body that we can't fix, we will also feel things in our bodies. Like, for instance, after the thing happened with the Buffalo Bills player, Hamlin, people were becoming much more fearful of what they were feeling in their body. All of a sudden, people were talking about, am I gonna suddenly go into cardiac arrest? I'm feeling something in my chest, or I notice that my head is this, or I notice that I have this thing going down my left arm. And again, it's good to be in our bodies and recognize what we feel, but the sense of panic and urgency after watching on a television, millions of people, I mean, obviously that's another show in and of itself, because the people in the crowd, the coaches, the mom who...
My son, Michael, wants to be an NFL. He lives and breathes. He can quote every statistic. He's has me buying him every, and it's not cheap, people. It's very expensive. He wants every NFL cap and shirt. And, you know, he has his favorites. And when he saw that, he was grief stricken. He was crying. He doesn't know personally this person, but he knew him to be a key player. He knew all the stats. He watched it and he said, you know, this can't happen. And then he was started to blame God. And I said, you know, you can't blame God, but you can say prayers and he'll be healed. And I can't guarantee that because I don't know what God's plan is, but, you know, say some prayers, because your tears are not helping him, but your prayers will. And he did that. So I feel like it's a miracle, because he often says, yeah, that's not going to do anything. And here he's, you know, recovering nicely, thankfully. But I can't imagine how many want to be football players, and football players just suffered trauma they may not even realize from watching that. Because I know as a parent, I said, I don't know if I want you to play.
Well, that was the other thing I was just going to say. You've got the young boys who are all saying they want to be in the NFL, but then you have the parents who are going to panic and think, I don't know if I can let my kid do that sport. Look at what just happened. And again, it's not the first time that that's happened. There have been other players on college teams, and there's high school teams where we'll occasionally listen on the news and hear about somebody who went into cardiac arrest. The thing that's different, I think, about the Hamlin story is that we watched it. We watched it. I mean, again, sometimes you watch the news and you hear about, but this is where it becomes trauma. We're watching a game on a Monday night, just watching a football game, and all of a sudden you literally watch this man fall backwards. And then I remember after he fell and had his cardiac arrest, the commentators, for whatever reason, they kept them on air for a good hour trying to figure out, do we play? Do we postpone the game? I was focused on the commentators, and I was focused on their reaction to what they had just seen. And I listened to their words and things that they were saying. In all my years of commentating, I have never been in this situation. And I was thinking about them 3 days, 4 days, a week later. Like, how many nightmares have they had? And I'm also thinking of Hamlin. I mean, you see these wonderful images of him in the hospital with his thumbs up and his family by his side. Can you imagine how scary it's going to be for him, not even to play football, but to even just stand up and walk down the hallway? How is he supposed to feel safe to be able to just stand in his own body and know that it's going to work for him when the last thing that happened that he can remember is falling backwards and not being able to breathe?
Yeah, I can't imagine. Even driving or doing some simple things might be scary for him, which really goes into in my research for this show, which I didn't have a whole lot of time to do, but I also read the 4 R's, which are key assumptions in a trauma-informed approach, which is what you do every day. But what we're talking about really then is the realization, recognition, responding, and resisting re-traumatization. So, realization that the widespread impact of trauma is there, and understanding that the path to recovery is to recognize the signs and symptoms of the trauma and maybe your extended family, like, the football player Hamlin, his family has got to be traumatized. I know as a mom, I would be. And then responding by integrating any knowledge about the trauma into, how am I going to do this in the future? What steps do I have to take? Like, he might have to double check or triple check his equipment before he goes on the field. What is it I can do to make myself feel safe? Are there any policies and procedures in my workplace or my sports or whatever that I need to change to feel safe? What can I do so that I won't feel re-traumatized? I mean, I think there's a lot to those 4 R's that play into what we're talking about.
So one of the challenges of what you're describing is that when something happens and we're trying to figure out how to reintegrate and be in our bodies, is that trauma, people who go through different types of traumas are often most afraid to be in their bodies. They associate being, or I should say we associate being in our bodies with being in some type of danger. So that's the biggest challenge. How do I plant my feet on the ground in 2023 on January, whatever the heck day it is, and think for a second, what am I actually feeling in my body? Because a lot of times the feelings that we have, anxiety, fear, sadness, we feel them in our bodies and we associate those feelings with danger when we've been through something like what Hamlin has been through, or even again, when somebody has been through an assault or somebody is trying to have a romantic relationship after they were assaulted. How do you consent to being with your partner? And then when your partner starts to put his or her hands on you, how do you stay in your body and know that what is happening now is different than the assault because you're choosing to be with this person? You know that this is somebody that loves you. It's okay to be intimate with somebody. How do you train your body to not re-experience the assault when your partner is trying to show you love in a physical way.
Well, let's talk about the I think one of the many important things that you just said is consent. So when you're dealing with someone who has had trauma, you need to recognize that they're different, they respond different, and you need to have their consent, not a nod of the head. You need to give clear indications of what are you doing? Do you have their permission? Because they have a right to informed consent that you're going to give them a hug, that you're going to touch them, that you are going to sit next to them, that you want to have intercourse with them. And they need to absolutely say, yes, yes, yes. And if there's any hesitation, it's a no.
Right. And the thing that we have to do as survivors of assault is we have to sit in our body and say, do I trust what this person is saying? Do I feel safe with this person? What's my gut telling me? Is my gut telling me run? Or is my gut telling me it's okay? And here's the thing. When you talk about the three E's, the effect, oftentimes what happens for people as they're trying to integrate is they'll feel two things at the same time. There's a part of them that's going to feel like they want to run. And then there's another part of them that's going to say, why? I think this is good. Like, I feel safe. So the challenge is, how do we acknowledge those feelings in our bodies that are about the past and put them in the past and keep ourselves and our bodies in the present? How do you do that? And that's a whole nother show too, because there's a whole process that somebody has to go through when they're trying to be in their body and be connected to another person. The biggest impact of trauma is that from the second it happens, we disconnect from ourselves. If we disconnect from ourselves, we cannot connect with other people. It's impossible. So we want to connect with other people, but we don't necessarily feel like we can, or we don't want to, or we're afraid to. So it's part of the, when you talk about the four R's, it's part of the process. And one of the things I just want to say too about this is you can't expect yourself to be able to move through this process quickly. You've got to move slowly with caution. We need to understand that you're going to go back and forth with your feelings, and you want to listen to what your body is telling you, of course, but we have to remember that sometimes our bodies will trick us. People who have had heart problems or even people who've had seizures will tell me that they start to notice feeling something on their head and they automatically think, oh my gosh, I think I'm having a seizure. As soon as they're reminded just 1 second of what they felt when they had that seizure, and then it's a whole process of, am I having a seizure now? Or am I having a body memory of having a seizure? Am I associating what I'm feeling in my head right now with that I'm having a seizure? Or am I just having a headache right now? So it becomes like a whole process.
So here's what I'm thinking. First of all, adverse childhood experience, which is ACEs, A-C-E, adverse childhood experience. It's when I think about it like that, because I'm big into acronyms, but that can impact a person's mental and physical health for a lifetime. But really at any age that happens, we have this, the rest of our life, we're dealing with this, but especially for children, I think we need to listen and make sure that there's some healing along the way, not where they get to 20 or 30 or 40 and they realize, oh, this is why I've always avoided going out at night or whatever it is. But what I'm wondering is it helpful if we gave someone an assignment and let's say they, whatever trauma, they fainted and hit their head and now they've got a gash and it always reminds them of that trauma, or they were in a car accident or there's a death or whatever trauma they've gone through. Would it be helpful to, first of all, help them recognize the trauma, but also even if they can't, or if they say like me, oh, that's not trauma, I can get over it, to make a list of, this was my life before this event. This was my life after. Before I would go to church on Sunday, on Saturday nights, because I wanted my Sunday free, but now I go on Sunday because I'm not going out at night. What are the little differences of what you do? And you might not, it might be as subtle as that. I used to eat desserts, and now I really control every single thing I eat, and I'm very worried about it. I walk an extra 5 miles if I even eat one grain of sugar. But whatever it is, any change should be looked at, and then maybe taken on the first or second appointment to a therapist. Would that help?
I do it a lot, actually. I think it's a great suggestion. What I often do is I'll say to people, how about if you try to make a timeline of different events that you would consider to be life-altering, traumatic, and I want you to also write down what the effects were. What were some of the things that you noticed changed? So I think what you're saying is a great idea. It's something that what it does is it helps us to validate the enormity of whatever happened to us, and it helps us to name it and place it. One of the other things I was thinking as you were just saying that is people who bury childhood memories of different types of traumas often end up having a whole bunch of health issues as they become older. So, for instance, 80% of women diagnosed with any type of autoimmune disorder are also reporting that they have a history of trauma. So these are things like fibromyalgia. I can't even think of some of the names of some of these disorders because there's ones.
I know a lot of women who say I can't get pregnant, but when they get down to it and they meet with the therapist, the doctor will say, you know, there's no biological reason here. And they meet with the therapist. And I've had several friends who've gone through this. They realize the infertility is because of they're in an unhappy relationship, a domestic violence has gone on, or something's happened in their past. And so their body is saying, I'm not ready. I'm not doing this. And your body is so damned smart. It won't even let you get pregnant if you are traumatized.
It's your body tries to protect you. And the thing that's sad about what you just brought up is that for many women who struggle with infertility, they think it's their fault. They think I'm not getting pregnant because I should not be a parent, or I'm not getting pregnant because I'm not worth being a mom, or I'm not getting pregnant now because I had an abortion after I was assaulted as a teenager. So it's very complicated. And again, our bodies are often in conflict. It's never just one way. There are people out there who really want to have great lives, who want to be parents, who want to be able to get married again, even after they've lost a family member or a partner. People want the best for themselves most of the time. The problem is that there's this other part of us that doesn't feel worthy or deserving. And we're talking today about how the body holds trauma. But the body holds the shame. The body is containing so much of the feelings that maybe haven't been fully worked through. So, again, oftentimes our bodies, just like our minds can be in conflict, our bodies can be at war with themselves, if that even makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense. You good
Yeah.
over there? You good
Yeah,
over here?
totally made sense. I was just thinking about how trauma can control the body when you don't realize it, and thinking about my own situation, like, huh, what, you know, right now, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily trauma today, but my parents are not doing well. They're really not doing well. And my children, my twins, who are always naughty, are even naughtier. And I have this sense that part of them being naughty,
You with the world.
naughtier, is really the disassociation that they want from my parents, knowing intuitively, like this is the trauma they're holding, intuitively that death is soon, whether it's 2 months or 2 years from now, they see it coming. And I'm thinking that, you know, that's also sort of a precursor. We're smart enough in our bodies to think, okay, this train wreck's coming, and I need to go into a shell.
And they, if they're having any feelings that are making them uncomfortable or feel out of control, then they're going to do things to try to take control, or they're going to make decisions that are going to partly be a way for them to express the feelings or the situation that is far above and beyond what they can handle, meaning they can't fix it. They cannot fix it. And they also pick up on the feelings that their mom are having about their parents. They probably, because again, I think kids are so flippin' smart, they pick up on some of the feelings that your mom and dad are having. So I think that I think, again, in what you need to do in those type of situations, when you live in a house where there's illness or impending death, in some cases, you want to be able to talk about it. Now, again, most 12 and 13 year olds do not want to sit down and have a conversation about that their grandparents are sick and may not be here much longer. But at the same time, when kids are acting out, they are saying that they need or want something, whether it's get me away from this or help me understand this, or even to be able to say to you, can't you fix this? Why aren't you doing this? Because again, it might not be logical. You know, you're doing everything you can be doing, but sometimes people just need to say what they think, even if it's not rational or logical. You want to be able to put voice to that.
Yeah. And it's really the three E's and all of those things to be mindful of it. And it also leads me to this issue. My mother always tells me this. When I was a baby, if she had somebody babysit me and I would get upset, she knew that something was not right. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't call back that babysitter. Mm-hmm. I think we even need to listen to the intuitiveness of infants. If there is someone who an infant, every time the person is there to babysit or to have dinner with you, that baby's crying. You can say, I have a colicky baby, but maybe that baby is feeling some kind of trauma associated with whoever is there, especially if there's a pattern. And, you know, I've had five children, so babies cry and things happen, but I have also not called back babysitters, changed schools, done all sorts of things with my kids because they may not be able to tell me something, but when I see any pattern of behavior that I say, wait a minute, doesn't fit, I'm looking for that trauma and I'm sensitive enough to say, I need to change. You know, you change the music and the dance changes. So I change the dance. I watch the reaction.
I think it's great. It's a great point. And again, with infants and small children, they communicate through whether it's crying, tantrums, screaming. They can't put words to what's going on in their bodies, but they're going to let you know. And if we aren't willing to listen and go with what our instincts are telling us, because I think as a parent, you can kind of tell the difference between a kid that's colicky versus a kid that's having a meltdown. I just think that you can tell if you're paying attention and you know your child. And I think that, you know, again, that's the area that I guess is the one that most interests me, is really understanding when something awful happens in your child, how all of those experiences and the effects of that often come out through what they're feeling in their bodies, because they can't formulate. I couldn't tell you half of what was going on in my life probably until I was 18 years old. Even as a teenager, there were things going on in my life that just, it's not that I didn't understand that something was wrong, but I didn't know what to call all that stuff, right? How do you know what to call all that stuff? So I think that, you know, the messages that we're trying to convey today really are about the impact of trauma and how, when it lands in our bodies, what we need to do. As adults, we have a better understanding, we have words, but to be able to get back into our bodies and figure out how to understand what our bodies are telling us, figure out how to really stay connected to our intuition, because we all have one, and figuring out what to do with the information once we understand our bodies are telling us something.
And for everyone to understand, there's no age limit on who can be traumatized. Anybody can be traumatized. And there's no time limit on healing. The important thing is to recognize the event, the experiences and the effects, and get trauma-informed treatment and help to make sure that you are not going through life and these experiences, not enjoying life, but rather reliving over and over the trauma. And the trauma doesn't get better. It simply gets worse and comes out in so many, many ways. But you know, if you don't have a person like Sherry, there are many, many trained trauma therapists, and you can find them online. We have a lot of resources at the bottom of our various shows. Sherry's really good about putting them up. And once in a while I find one, but not as many as you, Sherry. You really dig deep.
You have your strengths. I have my resources. And as we're getting ready to end, I just wanted to say this too. If you're someone that does have a host of physical issues because of something that you experience traumatic wise, also find doctors or specialists that are trauma informed, meaning if you're going to a doctor who only will focus on the pain in the moment versus maybe trying to dig a little deeper and trying to help you understand where some of that pain is coming from, you're not getting the best care. So you really do, when you're looking for all types of specialists, it is okay to ask, is this somebody that has worked with people who have been through sexual assault, who have experience working with childhood abuse survivors, who understand the emotional impact of living through disasters or sudden loss? I think it's really very important. I will say what I do when I call to get a doctor is I won't go see them unless I find out if this is a doctor that has been experienced in dealing with some of these issues. If I ask the question and they don't answer it, then there's my answer.
Right. Lack of transparency is an answer.
Yeah. And it's okay to ask for that.
It is. And just make sure that you, as Sherry says, go to someone who's trauma informed, but they need to acknowledge if you think, oh, well, over this phone call, yeah, this is a person I want to see. But the first couple of appointments, you're not feeling right about it. You don't think that they're acknowledging your trauma, that they understand you, that they're listening, because they really need to understand every part of trauma, the various options, the various treatments. They need to listen. They need to give you options of things that you can do to feel better every single week and to open you up. And if you're not comfortable with the person, you're not going to get the help you need. You need to really be emotionally connected with your therapist in terms of, I am safe. I can talk about anything. They won't make fun of me. They're going to understand. And this is where I need to be to get help. And if that's not happening, move on. There's another therapist who's right for you. Kind of like cares. It's okay to do this. Yeah. One's not right. This one's not right, but this one feels great.
Absolutely. And you know what? You're going to feel in your body if it's right, because you're going to notice if you start to feel uncomfortable or if you start to feel unsafe. You're going to feel things in your body that are going to give you the signal. So as we're getting ready to wrap up, I would say, listen to your body. If you're someone that really wants to be able to listen to your body, but you have too many memories and feelings that have clouded your ability to do that, then that's where you start. That's the focus of your work right now.
And just remember, events, experiences, and effects, write them down, make a list, see if you're someone who should seek some help. That is a sign of strength. Give voice to yourself. Choose yourself. You have to first be your own hero before you are the hero for someone else. And with that, we have to move on. But remember, if you like our podcast, please write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, Spotify or any of the number of places that you can listen, like Audible, my favorite station ever. And Sherry and I will be back next week.
Till next time.
See ya.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Warrior Women Speak. It is truly an honor to have conversations that are difficult to have, but that we need to have. Judge Aquilina and myself are so excited to announce that we are now doing speaking engagements in addition to our podcast. To learn more, you can email us directly at warriorwomenspeak@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen if you are enjoying what you're hearing. Until next time.